Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to Lost in the Static, everybody. Hey, I want to make an apology right away.
For a couple of episodes ago?
Well, a couple of things in general that I've been dealing with. I've got a new machine. It messes with my levels. And I've had a couple of episodes that just did not want to cooperate at all with the levels or anything like that.
Yeah, because I got a complaint about one. I think it was either the last episode or the one before that, where they were like, "Jesus Christ, was the opening high?"
Yeah, and I'm still getting used to the machine. It's going to take me a little while. And what's really odd is I barely hear anything. And there we go. But yeah, it's I'm still twiddling knobs. I'm still getting used to things, and I apologize.
Knob fiddler.
Yeah, I know.
Well, hey, the Adam and Eve promo. You know, the one where if people go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code STATIC, they get 3 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, 50% off of a single item, and free U.S. shipping. That's only good in the U.S., right?
Right.
Well, why doesn't that translate to other countries, do you think?
When it comes to selling adult
material
and adult gifts and stuff like that, every country kind of has its own rules about that. For instance,
that's
even within the U.S. it wasn't legal to sell adult products in Texas until very recently. Actually,
there are some places you still can't sell adult products in certain places. Just try and buy a Hustler in Cincinnati,
and just imagine trying to buy a vibrator or something like that in, say, the United Arab Emirates or Iran or some of in pretty much any of the Muslim countries. It can be very, very difficult to get stuff like that. So I can kind of understand that not translating well.
Well, why do you think then that media, whether it be comics, video games, movies, TV, etc., either translates perfectly to other countries or translates so terribly that it becomes embarrassing?
I think it also depends on the country of origin. For instance, Japan. There's a whole lot of stuff in Japanese movies and Japanese video games and Japanese culture, and when it comes to things like honorifics and language structure and stuff like that, that doesn't translate here to the U.S. because it's a huge cultural difference. For instance, in Japan, you know, here in the U.S., the streets have names. I live on Finger Road. I know.
I live on the corner of Maple and Geneva.
Yeah, you live on the corner of Maple and Geneva. Well, in Japan, the streets aren't named, but the blocks are. So if this were Japan, I might live in Garden Block, blah, 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 of Green Bay or something like that, as opposed to, you know... So in Japan, every block you can actually theoretically restart house numbers because it's a different block for the name.
Well, then what happens with the media? Now, right now with the example I want to give, what happens with, say, it's an American title, an American video game, for example, that is made in Japan and poorly translated when it comes over here? What happens in that? That really, they don't have one American overseeing the grammar or the spelling in video games. But to me, one of the most famous ones was Castlevania 2. One of the most egregious spelling errors I've ever seen. You now possesses Dracula's whatever. Possesses. It's not even misspelled by a letter. How does that get released with no one in the Americanization process noticing that's supposed to be possesses, not processes?
Well, who knows? I mean, they've gotten better. They've gotten a lot better because it used to be that you had, you know, a Japanese team localizing a game for the U.S. in Japan. And so they did the best they could with what English they knew. For instance, and this is not, this is going to come across as slightly racist. I don't mean it to be. It's just a difference.
It's the way it was.
It's just a difference in languages. For instance, here in the U.S., in English, there is a distinct difference between the letter L, like life, blah, 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 and the letter R, such as rifle. However, in Japan, the closest phonetic sound that they have is which is somewhere between the two. And so it comes up, might come off as rifle or rife, simply because they grew up having that. That's the closest sound that they have. And it's somewhere between L and R. And that's why you get words like congratulations.
Well,
or stuff like that.
How does that explain all your base are belong to us, make your time, ha 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 ha?
That is...
just someone not trying?
That's just a Japanese team doing the best they can. And you know, throw an English phrase into even Google Translate, which isn't too bad, or Babelfish, or your favorite translator. Translate it to Japanese, and then translate it back. And simply because sentence structure changes and
grammar changes. Certain syllables changes, will vanish?
Certain syllables will vanish. For instance, we have a distinction between life and living. And there are two separate words for that. And I don't know if this is true of Japanese or not. So if we have listeners that speak Japanese and go, that's wrong, it might be. But let's say that they have one word for both life and living.
Okay.
And so you'll translate that in and translate it back, and suddenly you'll end up with life where you mean living, et cetera, et cetera. And little grammatical differences like that, and sentence structure where in a lot of Japanese honorifics, instead of saying it's in the basement, you would say it is not upstairs. Instead of saying, you know, it gets a little bit weird because depending on what you're talking about, it's not that you do this thing, it's that you don't do the opposite of the thing.
So it's convoluted.
It to an English speaker, yes. And of course, English to a Japanese speaker is immensely difficult to get used to. So,
well, what about when it comes to, say, a product? Maybe there's a product that's so ubiquitous here in America that we take it for granted. And then when we ship the movie or game or whatever it is overseas, that doesn't translate. For instance, like, to sticking with video games, remember the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle video game?
Yeah.
With all the Pizza Hut advertising in it?
Yes, yes.
That, from what I've read, was totally lost because Pizza Hut wasn't nearly as big of a chain in Japan at the time. So they were like, the fuck is Pizza Hut? Well, why is Pizza Hut all over this? We've got Domino's everywhere. Why isn't it Domino's?
Right.
You know, for the Japanese version. One of the big examples would be in movies. You've seen Demolition Man, right?
Yes.
Okay. Demolition Man. Remember how Taco Bell won the franchise wars?
Right.
And every restaurant is Taco Bell.
Pepsi won the soda wars, and Taco Bell is a deal of Pepsi. And
play
blah,
this
blah.
Clip, and then I'll explain it.
Okay.
So, what's with this Cocteau guy anyway? He says I saved his life, which I'm not even sure I did, and my reward is dinner and dancing at Taco Bell. I mean, hey, I like Mexican food, but come on.
Your tone is quasi-facetious, but you do not realize that Taco Bell was the only restaurant to survive the franchise wars.
So?
So? Now all restaurants are Taco Bell.
No way.
Pulling into Taco Bell, and there's Taco Bell logos everywhere, people.
Yes, fancy Taco Bell.
Welcome to Taco Bell. Enjoy your meal, sir.
And you're going to hear an edit here in a moment.
Valley of the Jolly Green Giant.
Taco Bell, here we
What's
go.
What's this Cocteau guy anyway? He says I saved his life, which I'm not even sure I did, and my reward is dinner and dance in a Pizza Hut? I mean, hey, I like a big fat piece of pizza, but come on.
Your tone is quasi-facetious, but you do not realize that Pizza Hut was the only restaurant to survive the franchise wars.
So?
So? Now all restaurants are Pizza Hut.
No way.
So which one won the franchise wars is my question.
In America, it's Taco Bell. When it was released in Europe, Pizza Hut paid more. So it's Pizza Hut in Europe, And in Asian countries, it's McDonald's.
Really?
So depending on where you saw Demolition Man, a different restaurant is featured. And this was not some last second edit, because you heard that was Sylvester Stallone and Sandra Bullock's voice.
Right.
Doing the Pizza Hut dialogue.
Really badly dubbed, by the way.
Well, yeah, because I'm sure they didn't shoot it multiple times, but I'm sure in looping they,
oh, sure.
they did it. But so they knew this going in, that there are going to be multiple different product placements in this depending on where we're releasing this. So do you think that was just maybe a localization thing, that Taco Bell, more ubiquitous with stoners, who was kind of the audience for this movie, in America, whereas in Europe, Pizza Hut might be a little bit more, so maybe we want to go with that, and then McDonald's is huge in the Asian countries, so we want to go with that? Or why do you think it's a different franchise that won the franchise wars depending on where you see Demolition Man?
You know, in my heart, I want to say it comes back to money, and I want to say that Taco Bell went, well, sure, here in the U.S. we'll take care of it, well, it'll be this much more worldwide, and maybe, yeah, especially in Asia, I can see Taco Bell not exactly flying.
Even Pizza Hut, I can't see being that big in Asia.
No, I don't know. I've to tell you the truth, when I was traveling through Japan and Thailand and stuff like that, I never ordered pizza. I stuck with local fare, so I don't know. Now, I did when I was in England and such, but that was also from a local restaurant. I didn't go to chains.
I wonder what version Mexico got, because I know Mexico doesn't really consider Taco Bell to be Mexican food. So
I can tell you that most likely they got the North American cut.
They got Taco Bell.
Just to go that country specific, holy cats, that would be difficult, because, you know, maybe in Scotland it's more KFC than anything else, or who knows. But
you got to remember, one of the things with this is Pizza Hut and Taco Bell are owned by the same.
Yeah, they're both owned by Pepsi.
So not really a big change that would have to be made. I mean, it's not like it would be a bidding war.
But McDonald's.
McDonald's would be different.
McDonald's has been in bed with Coke for decades.
Yeah.
So, yeah, who knows?
So, I mean, you got that one, and you have ones with, and they're still doing this, with exclusive scenes for foreign audiences now in movies. For instance, Iron Man 3. Remember how he gets the,
sorry if it's a spoiler,
gets the life-saving surgery at the end and gets his heart finally replaced?
Yes.
Well, they specifically shot a version for the Chinese market where it's a Chinese team of doctors that do it.
Really?
Yes. Only in the Chinese print of Iron Man 3.
That's weird.
Looper, the Bruce Willis movie, that also had some scenes that were shot specifically in Beijing to be shown in that market. They're not on the DVD or anything.
That's odd.
They make specific localizations. They've been doing that a lot. Or even, and I bitched about this endlessly on Radio Drum because it still pisses me off, what's G.I. Joe's catchphrase?
A real American hero.
Not in the movies, because they knew an American hero would not sell overseas.
Okay.
They are just real heroes now, because Paramount specifically made them take out the American part, because then it seems too jingoistic, and and that won't sell as well in China and Europe.
Now, to be Superman also, remember it was a big deal in the comics when he renounces
his American citizenship.
I am no longer because it was truth, justice, and the American way for years and years and years, and then suddenly he goes, man, I'm not an American, I'm a citizen of the world.
Yeah, kind of hippie-ish, but, you know, it's kind of a hippie-ish philosophy, but what are you going to do?
So Superman is a Gaianic douchebag, is basically what...
Well, he is an alien, and technically an illegal alien, because he crashed here.
He did crash here, but maybe, who knows, maybe he went through...
Has he been naturalized? Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't remember if they ever went through that. I don't think any nerd ever... Is Superman naturalized? Okay. Just on that note, quick, you've seen Heavy Metal, right? A bunch of times?
Yes, yes.
There's still that one line I love. It's a terrible pun. Remember when Harry Canyon's in the police station and that one green guy is going, I'm an American citizen. Honestly, I just lost my paper. And he goes, God damn illegal aliens. I just think that's funny because it's an actual alien. I thought that was a funny pun. It's both terrible and funny at the same time.
True.
But that's just me. But then why do you think that these things need localization? That, for instance, in America, now you don't like change anime or whatnot as much anymore. You know, usually people get the just the subtitled version. You don't need the dubbed with the you know, the American accents and everything. In the 80s, when it first came over, there was that transition period. Fine, yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But now, usually when we get a foreign film, the audience doesn't need it localized.
It depends on the audience. Anime is kind of interesting because I when I was a kid, when I was younger, if there wasn't a dub version, I wasn't interested in seeing it. And now, because, you know, who wants to read a movie? Meh. But now that I'm a bit older, I like the dubbed versions. I like the subtitle versions. But at the same time, that's one thing that I love about Netflix is you can choose between original Japanese and English dub if there is one. And you can choose your subtitles between off or English or Japanese. And
in my case, when it comes to anime,
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like you. As a kid, I wanted the dubbed because I wanted to hear it. But some of those I grew up watching so much. Like Cam Clark is Kaneda to me in Akira.
Sure.
And when I hear the real voice, it sounds wrong.
Well, go back and watch Robotech.
The original Mesopita or whatever it was.
Yes. Yeah. And you hear it and you're just like, no. That's
the wrong voice.
Yeah.
Even if it's the right voice, it's the wrong voice.
Well, for instance, was it Duke Nukem 3D? There was some American game that hit big here. And then they translated it, and they brought in new voice actors to dub the. I think it was Duke because it was this iconic
John St. John.
Yeah, John St. John, which we all know is, you know, balls of steel, blah blah blah, and that kind of stuff. But they translated it for the Asian market, and so instead of hearing Duke with this booming voice down here, you get Duke with a very typical Asian voice, which just Asian vocalizations are typically higher in register than English is. And so instead of a big manly Duke, you get that to an American sounds kind of like a little wimpy dude, you know.
I don't remember which anime it was, but there was one that we had it. It was dubbed. This is like back in, I was still in high school, so maybe 89, 90. I don't remember what it was, but two of the characters were American. So it was clearly Japanese actors doing thick Texas accents that I cannot do what a Japanese person who doesn't speak fluent English trying to do a Texas accent sounds like. But it was so funny. It completely destroyed, because it was a battle scene. It destroyed any tension the scene might have had because it was so embarrassingly bad.
One of the characters in Cowboy Bebop is like that. Where it's and by the way, I'm going to ask our international listeners, why is it that when you think of an American accent, you immediately go to the South?
Usually
Texas.
Yeah.
Texas
it's a thick Texas accent, you know?
It's either Texas or occasionally like
Florida.
Georgia or sometimes Alabama. Tennessee. Depending on where they're from, because I've noticed that most Asian listeners, when you say do an American accent, they go to the thick Texas one. If you go to England or to a good chunk of Europe, and you say do an American accent, it comes out almost this Mississippi, Georgia, Southern drawl because, well, let's be honest, phonetically, the Southern American accent is a slowed down English accent. I hate to say it, but they're similar.
But I mean, that even happens in print.
But yeah, in print.
Because go back and read Dracula, the original 1898 Dracula. That, remember the one of the characters is American, and his name is Tex. He's from Texas.
Right.
And Bram Stoker I think, didn't quite get how American Texas would sound. And obviously, it's since it's print, you can't, you know, deal with the accent.
Right.
But the writing style, he was trying to specifically write the way Tex talked as different than all of these British characters. And it came off as almost racist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It came off as almost racist way that the Tex character would talk.
Yeah. And when it comes to localization, well, you know, there are some cases where if it's a joke, it just doesn't fly. I forget what movie I was watching, but we were watching and there was some line that was oddly American-centric. And it referred to something in our pop culture that happened in the late 90s. I forget exactly what the line was. But I looked it up on IMDb, and it's like, in these markets, the line was changed to this, so it would make sense.
Right.
And in these markets, the line was changed to this, so it would make sense.
Well, and
that I can understand.
I've got one other one. That I've only encountered this a couple of times with anime, okay? Where, okay, you're reading the subtitles, but then if there's and keep in mind, this is not dubbed, okay? If there's a character that's American, they would speak in English and have Japanese characters across the bottom of the screen. And I thought, it makes sense, but you don't usually think of it happening like that, do you?
Yeah.
But it makes sense when you think about it, doesn't it?
Exactly.
That to them, that character needs to be subtitled.
In fact, there is an anime that I like the English dubbed version of, and it's relatively recent, called Italia, actually, okay. Because there's an H on it. And each country of the world is portrayed by a person. So you have the big, strong, militaristic German, and the particular series I watched was Italia Axis Powers, and it's kind of talking about World War II and
Axis kind of implied that
being
yeah.
kind of yeah and you know so you have the big strict German, you have the militaristic overly polite Japanese in his military uniform, and then you have Italy and he's just kind of a goof and he's really lazy and everything like that. But if you want to, the thing that I love about Italia is because it's looking at the world using very, very stereotypical characters through the eyes of Japanese stereotypes of other nations. If that makes sense.
Which is kind of like a triple dilution, really.
Yeah. And so it's very interesting to look at. And America on that, the US on that one, is just this, he's constantly wearing a World War II bomber jacket, and he's just kind of a stupid bully.
Well, because I there's one anime that where I'm 50-50 between the dub and the sub.
Okay.
Because the subtitle version, the voices are better. They actually leave in the swearing. For whatever reason, they censored all the swearing out when they dubbed it to American.
Okay.
To English.
Who knows?
But at the same time, because they had to replace the entire audio track, they redid the music as well. I like the music in the American dub better than the Japanese subtitled version, but I like the audio in the Japanese subtitled version better than the American dub.
So if
does
only
that make
you could
sense?
Mix and match the two,
yeah.
you'd come up with your perfect.
Yeah, the soundtrack I like in the American version better because it's much faster and more and more pumped up.
More geared toward
an American.
Yeah,
and
American
to me, the soundtrack worked better there. Than it did in the Japanese version, but then you've got all these terrible fucking accents and dub lines. So it's kind of 50-50. Now, what about when words either don't translate or translate too well? For instance, you remember Happy Days, right?
Yeah.
You remember that it had a spinoff called Joni Loves Chachi, right? For about 12 or so episodes.
Yes.
Well, this never aired on Korean television. It only aired on the American Forces Network in Korea, you know, for our soldiers.
Okay.
Chachi means penis in Korean. So the title in Korean translated to Joni Loves Penis. Maybe the Americans might have wanted to change that if that would have aired in on Korean television.
I can definitely understand that. Well, you know,
because like I said, just that one word translates almost too well for the 70s.
Well, you know, and there are urban legends of translations working a little bit too well. For instance, this is an urban legend. I know it's not true. Relax and step away from the email you're about to send us. But the Chevy car, the Nova. Well, if you separate it, Nova means not to go.
So it means the car just sits in Mexican.
Right. And so when they took it down to Mexico, it supposedly they didn't sell any because it says doesn't go, you know, and that's not true. And to tell you the truth, as far as I know, this is an urban legend. I don't speak Mandarin, so I have no way of confirming this myself. But supposedly at one point, the KFC slogan of finger licking good translated to Mandarin was so good you'll eat your own hands.
It's actually a good catchphrase, though.
It's not bad.
You know, it is.
and then, of course, there's the Coca-Cola thing. I forget which of Coca-Cola's slogan it was, but apparently it, and this is not true, it's been confirmed, but translated over to Thai, it apparently said something like, break the wax tadpole or something like that, which,
well, meh. What about when a foreign TV show or a foreign movie is trying to depict America, and they get it so stereotypically wrong that it kind of comes across racist? For instance, do you remember the Canadian cop show Night Heat?
No, I don't. Not at all.
It was syndicated in America from the late 80s through the late 90s, almost 10 years. It's only four seasons of the show when it was syndicated for about 10 years. So Night Heat was a late night thing on local channels here for a long time. But, you know, it's a Canadian cop show. It takes place in Canada. Well, they had one episode that took place in New York. They had to go for, you know, some guy was fleeing to New York. So, you know how Canada has this stereotype of being so clean and tidy, right?
Sure.
So they had to mess up the streets to make it look like it was New York. And then they went to lunch. And the Canadian garbage pickup came through and cleaned everything up. So they came back from lunch and found that it looked like Canada again and not New York. It was like, okay, first of all, it's supposed to look like America. Yeah, you know, it's got to look like American, eh? We got to put like garbage everywhere, you know? That's all borderline racist, isn't it?
If they were wrong,
this is 80s New York, too.
This is 80s New York. It was.
But another example. It's gotten
better, but.
Another example would be two from the Godzilla franchise. In the American dub of Godzilla 2000, they have, and for some reason he's dubbed, but he's an American actor that's clearly speaking English. But he says, Godzilla's going to run through us like crap through a goose. You just kind of go, is that how they think Americans talk?
I hate to tell you this, but running through something like shit through a goose, that's a Kentucky, Tennessee thing.
I hear it all the time.
The
best is Godzilla Final Wars.
Okay.
Have you seen that one?
It's not
the last of the real Godzilla franchise where Godzilla is dying. His heart is going hypernuclear, and so he basically goes all serial killer and takes out every other monster all around the world before he goes.
All right.
Well, that means there's a scene in America. And it's got... Do you remember Cheech's car from Up in Smoke with the carpeting on the inside and the dingo balls and everything? Yeah. It's got a pimp with a pink one of those... all talking about how he's all pimped out, yo, and talking to an American cop, and he's holding his gun sideways, and he's like, I'm going to pop a cap on your ass, boy. And he's got gold teeth, and I'm like, this is how the Japanese think traditional American New York is.
Specifically African-American New York.
Yeah, I'm like, this is kind of offensive, honestly, you know?
You know, and I hate to say it, but... there's something to be said that I love looking at my own country through the lens of others. For instance, when I was over in England for 2 years, I was I constantly heard, for an American, you're pretty amazing, or you know,
you're not as dumb as we thought you'd be.
You defy everything I've ever thought about Americans, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And that's because the exposure that people get to Americans around the world are through American tourists. And I can tell you right now, there is a huge, huge difference between a tourist and a traveler. And the American tourists, I hate them. I hate traveling with Americans internationally. I really, really do, because they are the typical Fred and Mary from Middle America who believe that since they're American citizens, they're entitled to everything, and they...
National Lampoon's European Vacation.
Yes, yes, exactly that.
The Griswold's in that.
Yeah. And it drives me insane. Versus most American travelers and the college students I traveled with and stuff like that. If I land, let's say I go and I visit, and I'm going to murder his name because it's Thai and I don't speak Thai, but let's say I go and I visit our friend Nadawat, who listens to the show.
Yes. He actually works for Geek Juice now.
Oh, cool. The moment I land in Bangkok or wherever I end up landing in Thailand, I get out. The first thing I'm going to do with Nuttowood is be like, okay, we're going to talk for like an hour and a half on how I cannot offend you.
Well, speaking of that, you made me think of this with Bangkok. What about when, look at a horrid movie like Hangover 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Bangkok. Every single stereotypical joke you can get, especially the tranny. It's called Bangkok, honey, not Bangkunt.
Right.
That's borderline offensive, isn't it?
No, that's not even borderline offensive. That's straight up offensive. And that's
the one hooker they run into has a penis.
That's not uncommon in Bangkok. I wish I could say it different, but...
So then is it stereotypical if it's relatively true?
It is. It's again, looking at Bangkok through the lens of an American... If you ask your average American GI or your average American tourist about Bangkok, they're going to say, yeah, the street is just filled with ladyboys and you can trust no one and you're going to get robbed and end up sleeping with a guy and accidentally or something like that. If you actually talk to people in Bangkok and you look at the real city and not... Because the America that we present to travelers is New York, L.A., and Las Vegas.
Pretty much.
And that's... Usually when I see people internationally, those are the three cities that they know in America. So that shapes their entire view of America. So if they've been to Los Angeles, they expect Green Bay and Milwaukee to be exactly like Los Angeles. And you and I both know that it's completely different.
Yeah.
And or if
Milwaukee and Green Bay are almost like they're in different right. fucking countries.
Exactly. And so... If you and I go over to Thailand and all we see is Bangkok and all we see is that commercial veneer that they put on the city in order to cater to American travelers, that's what we're going to think that all of Thailand is like. It's not. It's, you know, that's one thing that people have to keep in mind is that Saga, Japan, and Kyoto, Japan, and those cities are completely different from Tokyo. But if you go and Tokyo is the only city you see, you kind of go, okay, the whole country is like this. And it's a traveler's folly.
Well, what about then how we present how we present ourselves, how we are presented in when you get like a hit show. For instance, Baywatch. Remember, the most popular show in the world. In Europe, that thing was breaking records. And then the 90s series Renegade actually beat Baywatch in Renegade's third season.
Sure.
Is that an idealized version of America to the Europeans? Because that had to have hit some kind of a nerve. Both Baywatch and Renegade had to have hit some kind of a nerve with Europeans to be that goddamn popular. Do you think that's kind of them going, this is what America is like? Or this is what I want America to be like.
Yeah, I think it's about 50-50. And I think, you know, shows like Baywatch and Renegade play to the lowest common denominator.
But the weird thing between those two is they're really in different genres. Renegade is a bounty hunter running from the cops show. Baywatch is pseudo drama with tits. Why do you think those two shows that are arguably incompatible, they hit the same audience so hard?
What were the three cities that I mentioned?
Bangkok.
No. In the U.S.
New York, L.A., and
Las Vegas.
And Las Vegas.
Well, you've got Baywatch, L.A. encapsulated. You've got Renegade, which...
Which was all the whole country.
Right, but getting to Las Vegas from L.A., which is how most tourists get there, you pass through the Wild West and the Badlands and the desert and all that stuff. And so... That idea of the American cowboy, Doctor Who, series 5, 6, something like that, they shot some stuff in the American Southwest, and the Doctor played up, you know, I wear a Stetson now, Stetsons are cool, and they kind of played up that American cowboy image. That American cowboy image has been ingrained in the rest of the world as much as it is in our country. It's just that you and I know that. Yeah, maybe during westward expansion, there was the cowboys were here in Green Bay and more the French fur traders and stuff. But when you and I think cowboy, we think Southwest U.S.
Yeah,
or Texas West, until you get to California, and then it's a different country altogether. To a lot of people who don't do research prior to coming to the States, they think cowboys start in New York and stop in Hawaii.
Okay.
And that's you play to the stereotypes that you know, because you know that you have a built-in large audience.
But then why do certain actors or even bands translate so well? For instance, the Germans fucking love Hasselhoff. The French fucking love Lewis. The Japanese, Iron Maiden, sells more albums in that one country than they do in the rest of the world throughout their career. Why do you think a certain actor, in the case of Lewis and Hasselhoff, or band, in the case of Iron Maiden, just strikes such a chord with not just even a region, but a nationality?
Hasselhoff, when he sings and when he performs, and he's not nearly as popular as he used to be. Still quite popular, but not nearly as popular as he used to be. At the height of his popularity, when he was singing on top of the Berlin Wall with the light up jacket.
God, I remember that.
Hasselhoff sounded like German adult contemporary music. He struck a cultural chord, something, and because I'm not German and have spent very little time in Germany, I can't really speak to what it was, but he hit a cultural chord with them in the same way that you go down to the South and Southern rock hits a cultural chord in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, etc. Hasselhoff struck a German chord.
What about like Iron Maiden in Japan?
Again.
Because Iron Maiden is popular here. They are fucking superstars in Japan.
They hit a chord with Japanese youth and the revolutionary feeling of it all. In Japan, culturally, typically when you dance, it is good to be part of a group. It is good to be doing the same thing that the group is doing. It's good to be, you know, we are one Japan, we stand together. And that's an old Japanese idea that's been around for centuries. When you are a teenage youth in Japan and you want to revolt and go, no, I want to be different from everybody else, you look to America and you look to what America is seeing as revolutionary music. And when Iron Maiden hit, you know, it was during the big Satan scare and stuff like that, and maybe even prior. A bit,
I was going to say, I think they still hit in the Paul Di'Anno era, yeah, which is before all that stuff.
But nonetheless, they were seen as a revolutionary type of music. So as a Japanese youth wanting to revolt against all this, you should be the sameness type thing, it's going to hit that chord of revolution. So I can understand it completely. And I probably haven't explained it real well, but...
You and your jibber jabber.
I hope so. I try.
Well, okay, now, on that same note then, what about when there is a brief, and I'm looking at this from an American perspective, a brief cultural boom from another country that goes away after a while. You know where I'm going with this. Remember in the late 80s, the Australian boom?
Yeah.
Everywhere. Everything. Every band, every TV show, the styles, the accent, everything for like a year and a half. It was like Australia was the cool thing. And then everyone went, whatever.
And it really... And it
just died almost overnight, didn't it?
Yeah, and it didn't come out of nowhere either. The Australia boom in the U.S. really started in the late 70s.
It hit its peak with Crocodile Dundee.
With Crocodile Dundee and those horrible Paul Hogan movies.
I liked the first one.
The first one was good. The next two, meh.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first one.
But you got to remember, too, we also had... by the time the early 80s hit, we had Dot and the Kangaroo come over. We had a lot of this Australian youth programming speaking to the young. So for the next 10 years, they were like, Australia is cool. And then it peaks with that generation's peak with Paul Hogan. And then the attention kind of shifted. And now it's kind of shifting towards, well, you remember prior to Australia, Japan was the big thing. And
because anime had just started to leak over in America, mangas, comic book stores were starting to carry manga.
The cultural side, including anime and manga, and that started to leak over because at that time, Japan also had the world's strongest economy. Gone downhill a little bit since.
Yeah, so well, so have we.
Well, so have we. But, you know, Japan had started doing huge business, especially in the auto market with the U.S. So they came in economically first, and then their culture kind of followed them as they came over. And so,
what about the clashing culture movies? Like, have you seen Gung Ho?
Yes.
With the Michael Keaton movie?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's clearly an American, Americans are better than Japanese at manufacturing movie. Yet it was co-produced by a Japanese company, but all the Japanese characters end up looking bad, and they're as stereotypical as you can get. Is that almost propagandist?
It is propagandist, honestly. And it
I mean,
was...
the movie does have its funny parts, don't get me wrong, but I kind of saw that as a America, yeah!
Well, that movie was clearly aimed at the blue-collar worker in the U.S., I mean, you got to remember who
felt his job on jeopardy from Japanese manufacturers and whatnot.
Exactly, and so you produce a good movie like Gung Ho, which is, you know, America, fuck yeah.
And you know what? A lot of people don't realize that had a TV series, 6 episodes. Gone.
Really?
Yeah, that was a TV series of Gung Ho.
Did not last
at all. It was a mid-season replacement. What do you expect? I do want to ask you about this though. Something you brought up a while ago, but I forgot. When you make an American version, not a localized version, but an American version of a foreign property, why does it usually go wrong? For instance, the 1996 Doctor Who with Eric Roberts as the Master. That was Fox literally Americanizing it. I mean, there's drive-by shootings, there's gangs, there's slapstick. That is, I hate to say it, but what Americans think, I mean, Fox executives and the producers really thought this would hit a chord with Americans because that other version, it's too British. It's too stuffy. It's too dry.
Stop right there. You just answered your own question. It's what audience are you going for? What do they expect? I mean, that 1996 movie is a popcorn movie is what it is. And
Eric Roberts is the Master. How do you get more awesome than that, Scott?
It's a lack of respect.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about
it. And that's usually when, unfortunately, when Americans get their hands on foreign properties and remake them into an American style, it's a lack of respect and it's a lack of cultural perspective that would allow them to see the good that is there.
But doesn't that say more to the what they think of you as the audience because of the fact that they're going, you won't accept this if we just have American actors in these roles, you know, and keep the roles essentially the way they are, such as that long-threatened Akira remake, that live-action one.
Right.
It's no longer in Neo Tokyo. It takes place in New York. It's not Kanada and Tetsuo. It's Jim and Frank. I'm not kidding. The gang is all multicultural. There's a black and a Latino and an Asian. And it's like, do they think we're stupid?
Yes.
It really just comes down to that.
I can't argue that. They think we're unfortunately, it's because the research that they do, the focus groups that they hold, and the studies that they do basically go, if we make this too British, it's not going to fly.
Or in the case of Akira, if we actually stick to, you know, or
stick to the Japanese cultural, you know. I mean, Akira is an interesting thing because it's a Japanese way of looking at the atomic bomb.
Well, for the same reason you could say Godzilla. And now, we all grew up watching Godzilla with Raymond Burr.
Yeah.
You know, because literally the American distributor thought, this is all Japanese people, even if we dub it, and I this is racist. They actually said, we don't give the Americans anyone to root for. Because they're not going to root for these Japanese people 10 years after we dropped a bomb on them.
There you go.
We have to have an American in this lead role because Americans need someone to rally behind. So that's Raymond Burr.
I have some bad news for the rest of the world. America is just now starting to get past World War II and what we think of y'all.
Did you just y'all?
Yes, I did. I hate to say it, but my generation is... Our generation, Josh, is the first one to look at the Japanese and understand that for our entire lives, the Japanese have been our allies.
Oh, yeah.
And we can...
To our grandparents, not so much.
To our parents, not so much. I mean, no, at least parents... My parents are a little bit older than most, but, you know, my mom and my dad grew up where... They were slanty-eyed gooks, and they were slanty-eyed gooks from Japan. And then, right as you and I were born, they were slanty-eyed gooks from Vietnam. And so they've been almost trained their entire lives because they were born right at the end of World War II, that these slanty-eyed people are bad and evil, and you cannot root for them, and blah, blah, blah. Our generation is the first one to really be able to understand... approach Japanese and Vietnamese cultures and other Asian cultures with an open mind. We're the first ones.
Okay, I want to bring up another example of weird localization because I'm not trying to change the subject. I agree with you, so I got nothing to add to that.
That's fine. Okay.
You've seen Johnny Mnemonic, right?
Yes.
Personally, I think it's a highly underrated movie. I really enjoyed the shit out of Johnny Mnemonic.
It's not bad. It's good.
We never there. Got to see the true version of it. Not even the Japanese got to see the true version.
Okay.
Remember the Takahashi character, the one who lost his daughter and was the one actually after Johnny's head, but the laser whip guy was kind of betraying him?
Yes.
He's got about 30 more minutes of screen time in the Japanese cut of the film.
Really?
Because he was a much, much bigger actor than Keanu Reeves was at the time.
So they thought he would sell in Japan.
Right. So the Japanese version, which has still never been released on DVD, to my knowledge, it's only the Laserdisc cut with hard-coded Japanese subs, but you can find them on Pirate Bay. But yeah, the Takahashi version, it's called. He has much more screen time, almost a half hour more screen time in that version. Do you think that the Takahashi character... Let's say all those scenes were put back in the American version. The movie bombed anyway. Would it have hurt to have left them in, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen them. I can't make a judgment call. I'd like to see them, honestly. But yeah, I don't know. I guess not. I don't know.
But, I mean, why do you think they would do that? Just sort of, well, this actor is big here, so he gets more screen time in this cut. Whereas no one in America really knows who he is, so just keep him in as much as he has to be to keep the plot moving.
Yeah.
Is that kind of insulting, though, to both cultures, us and them?
I don't know about to both cultures. It's certainly, it's us insulting ourselves. And I can't speak from the Japanese side because I'm not Japanese. I don't have,
well, but I'm not this familiar enough.
But that's what I'm saying is it's certainly insulting to us. I think that, you know, for instance, when I say big, angry Mexican, big, scary, angry Mexican actor, who do you think of?
Danny Trejo.
There you go. Every American's going to go, oh, Trejo. There are people that believe that that's what Mexico is like. It's just a whole bunch of Danny Trejos running around shooting each other over drugs.
But you've had this. I mean, for one thing, it's not new in Hollywood. One of the big things was if you were a foreign film, in even going back to the 40s and 50s, you had to have an American actor in it. You know, that this would not sell in America if it's an all Swedish cast, if it's an all Japanese cast, if it's an all German cast. We have to have some recognizable American actor whose career is on the downslide that we can get and put on the poster.
And I can tell you from seeing both versions of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
I have not seen either yet. I've heard both are really good, though.
Both are good, but
I like Noomi Rapace too. So I'm not sure if I, you know,
both are good. Go with the original one. And the other, I think it was Denmark. I forget what country filmed it, but Let the Wrong One In, or
Let the Right One In.
Let the Right One In.
I didn't like the original of that, nor the remake. To me, both of those sucked.
Okay, well, I liked the original. I didn't care for the remake. But that, it's unfortunate, but I think that's playing to the lowest common denominator of American. And I'm hoping that that will change in upcoming generations when we don't have... That shadow of World War II is long.
Well, yeah, because as much as it might sound racist, I can't blame movie producers from the 50s. Because, yeah, if you bought some Japanese movie named Gojira that was all about how the atomic bomb personified, and since we did that to them, there's no way that would have hit an American audience in 1954 without an American lead sell it. So as bad as it sounds, they weren't wrong.
Yeah. I'm hoping that that long shadow of World War II will eventually go away and we can laugh over the localizations of Taco Bell versus Pizza Hut and things like you have accomplished the mission. You are very, you know...
What happened?
Yeah. Somebody set us up the bomb. You know,
I feel asleep.
Yeah. We can look back on that stuff and laugh eventually and kind of deal with localizations that way and go, huh, when jokes are localized. But unfortunately, I think, like I said, I think our generation is the first one to really start to peel out of the shadow of World War II and the stereotypes that it created.
Well, I just want to end this on what I think is kind of a funny thing. Okay, Pac-Man. Just think of Pac-Man, an American icon made by the Japanese based on an idea while eating Italian food.
Right.
That's kind of funny, isn't it?
It kind of makes it awesome.
Yeah, because he got the idea from a pizza, and then it was made in Japan and became an American icon. That kind of all-encompassing, isn't it?
It's cool as hell. I love stuff like that. So, international listeners, I'm really looking forward to hearing from you on this one.
I wonder how we translate.
Yeah.
Because we basically, I'm just talking over the 200 or so episodes we've done, talk about American pop culture.
Sure.
Tell us. Contact us at 1201beyond@gmail.com. How some of our references, whether they go over your heads, whether you get them, whether you think we're fucking stupid, or like whether the things we've said tonight or whenever we talk about another country, whether it's if it's your country, whether we are so fucking wrong or if we're relatively close.
Yeah. And I can tell you in a couple places we were fucking wrong, but that's...
Oh, well, that's going to come with the territory, man.
Exactly. So thank you all for joining us.
We will
see you guys next week. Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.